This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Gary Smith.
Welcome. We're back in our rhythm on the Sunday morning bard at the altar of reasonable doubt. How are you, Gary?
I'm great, Mark. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. I think we've got time for two stories today, both of which I think are somewhat interesting. You want to lead with Jake Tapper? This is kind of a warm-up for this week in the big show, because I think when we play this for Ace, his head may explode.
Yeah, and I think Drew may just call in, having heard it from somewhere in Pasadena, because it's just that insane. Let's take a look.
I have to say, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a national conversation about the damage done to kids because of these school closures and the virtual learning and everything, because, I mean, I'm not saying there should be a national do-over, but we can't just pretend that fifth graders who are now seventh graders, that didn't happen, you know? And like, I feel like there should be, and not with a blame game. Look, it happened. People did it. It was criticized, the school closures, the virtual learning, et cetera. But here we are. There needs to be like a bipartisan movement, you know?
Why? I wonder why we wouldn't want to do a blame game. Can you figure out maybe?
People did it. It was done. People criticized it. Shut up. Shut the fuck up.
You know, there's here in, you know, Adam will have quite a bit to pontificate about on this. I have no doubt. But the idea that somehow, I mean, it's such an American phenomena. As of late, to just kind of divorce yourself from the whole discussion and just act like it just came out of nowhere and that you had no responsibility for it. One of the great things is, I think, that you do have video, and probably before the next episode, we'll have some video of what was actually happening. And one of my favorite expressions, let's just play the tape, see what the tape says.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just silly. And now to have him come around as though they're, you know, doing some service that no one else has the guts to do. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's hard to believe. And by the way, the blame game goes all the way around. You know, we talked just briefly, because it was happening in real time on the big show, about the Steve Bannon sentencing. And It's interesting to me because once again, I've been watching commentators talk about the fact that he's, and specifically, I won't call out this one particular lawyer who's been out bloviating on what's going to happen, talking about how, oh, he may have escaped jail right now, but he's going to lose in the court of appeal, and then he'll end up doing his time. I'm going to predict that what happens. For those of you who don't know, Steve Bannon was convicted at jury trial after a judge ruled that he could not use what's called an advice of counsel defense, that he relied on his lawyer, that he talked to his lawyer. His lawyer said, you can do this or that. And when you use an advice of counsel defense, you know, that opens up, kind of like in the legal malpractice cases, it opens up what the conversation was that normally would be sacrosanct from attorney client.
Right.
So he was not able to do that. He also wanted to go down the road of showing specifically how the contempt was not brought in good faith, and he wanted to challenge the veracity of the and the makeup of the January 6th committee. You know, this rang or resonated with me because, as you know, Gary, I've talked many years about how I believe that everything, the current milieu, is a flip on its head of what was going on in the 90s with Clinton and McDougal. And I actually tried to a jury contempt, two counts of contempt, ironically, and an obstruction of justice. I've always said that I thought that the Ken Starr Office of Independent Counsel made a mistake by adding a obstruction of justice, because that was a broader, gave me the ability or a broader ability to talk about the justification for the investigation itself. That's what the judge ruled in Bannon's case he couldn't get into. And so we could go over all the legal niceties. I could compare both Susan McDougal's two counts of contempt, which the jury hung on in her case, and when we tried it in Little Rock versus Bannon, where he got convicted. I also, it reminded me of another case we had back in the Barry Bonds Balco litigation. Mm-hmm. Remember the Greg Anderson, who was a client of mine. We ended up before I got hired, he had been found in contempt for not testifying. They always characterize it as not testifying against Barry Bonds. I think it was more that, if I had to guess, the motivation of Greg was he just had no use for the U.S. attorneys in that case and did not want to cooperate and thought it was a flawed investigation. Exactly the same defense. I mean, both Susan McDougal with the Office of Independent Counsel, Greg Anderson with the U.S. attorneys who were pursuing Barry Bonds, and now Steve Bannon here in D.C., all three of them have kind of staked out the idea that it's not so much the subject matter that we object to, it's the investigation and what you would call the sanctity, I suppose, of the investigation. He was not allowed to go there. But all of the legal niceties aside, what's going to end up happening, I'm going to predict it now so we can play the tape and see if I'm right or wrong. I think the appeal is just going to postpone this until next year. Yeah. So he doesn't have to go into custody. He was sentenced, I believe, to 4 months.
The correct.
Government didn't get the $100,000 per count. They what did they get? $6,500 or
total.
Something.
Yeah, $6,500 between the counts.
And just kicking it over next year, because what will end up happening is, Adam and I disagree on one point, although I'm not so sure there's that much daylight between us. I don't think that the Republicans, when they take over the House, and I'm going to prognosticate that on November 8th, they take over the House. I don't think that they're going to focus as much on January 6th as they are on other things, Hunter Biden's laptop and, you know, things of that nature. But I think one of the things they will do is probably dismantle the January 6th committee, not only dismantle it, but I think they're going to clean it up. And when I say clean it up, that's their words, not mine. But what they will do is they will start nunk-pro-tunking, which is the Latin term for kind of reversing a lot of these things. And you'll see where I don't believe Peter Navarro or John Eastman or and specifically Steve Bannon. I think they're going to try to reverse all of those actions. And that's where the rubber will meet the road when it comes to Steve Bannon. I don't think he'll ever do a day in jail on this case. Now, remember, Steve has also got, he was pardoned on the Build the Wall mm-hmm. supposed fraud case, pardoned federally. But now the Manhattan DA's office has come after him. So he still has that kind of lingering over his head.
Right.
It's an interesting issue. I know that most people are saying that the federal pardon does not cover the state case. And that's generally the case unless there are certain code sections that get in the way. Because you remember Manafort had that issue and actually won on it. And they're trying to say, or the most of the commentators are saying, it's not the same here. We'll dive into it later on. Now I want to segue and we'll finish with maybe the best story of the week. You want to give a little summary?
Well, yeah.
This is right up your... Well, I won't. Go ahead.
How dare you? This is a story that's been going much more mainstream, and I'd say it's been bubbling for the past two or three weeks, but it just keeps unfolding and keeps getting crazier and crazier. There are...
And for you, the Reasonable Doubt listeners, the reason we're bringing it to the forefront is 2 days ago, 3 days ago, mm-hmm. a lawsuit was filed, I believe, in the Eastern District of Missouri. Correct.
Defamation lawsuit. Correct. That was on Friday, and the complainant, the what is it, complainant or would it
complainant,
seeking $100 million from various entities, including somebody who plays publicly under the name Magnus Carlsen, who's one of the top chess players in the world. And who
maybe in history, and also has the thing. I think Magnus has also got, because I've watched people, it's got something called Play Magnus. And
correct.
So develop this grand, it's kind of the Madden of chess.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the number two kind of operator in the world behind chess.com, which has amassed a lot of power over the past 20 years. And, you know, it got to a point where chess.com came to him and paid him almost $90 million to merge their services and, you know, give chess.com a virtual, you know, monopoly. So Magnus was playing in a game against a young up-and-comer named Hans Niemann. And it was an over-the-board game.
Fairly young. He's kind of a whiz kid prodigy, 19. Correct.
He's 19. He's been kind of exploding on the chess scene, especially in the last 5 years. Many at the elite level are confounded as to how he was able to grow his game so much in such a short period of time. And, you know, we're talking about the 10 best players in the world are all kind of getting together and sort of putting their hands up and going like, this just is not how chess skills develop. Like it does not happen this fast. So there's always been a bit of distrust amongst that echelon about this person. And then Hans Niemann met with Magnus Carlsen in what's called an over the board game. You know, in the day of the internet and chess.com, it's less common or
they did it over Teams or something, right?
I thought it was an in-person game, the first game, right? So the first game that they played against each other that sort of started the controversy was an over the board game. So they were played in person at a chess tournament that has a name which I'm having trouble finding right now. But regardless, Hans Niemann beat Magnus, and it was a big shock to the chess world. And Magnus was very displeased and accused Hans of cheating. And they analyzed the game. Nothing was done, and Magnus was beyond himself. And then it was shortly later that they met up in a digital game, which I have some video of here. So let's watch that, and then we'll kind of come back with analysis.
It's d4 because this is his main move. D4, knight f6, c4. Yeah, definitely.
So that's Magnus top right.
No.
What happened?
No.
So if you see here, a score has gone up. Magnus has lost. He's forfeited the game, and he has left the team's meeting.
What
basically
happened?
Two moves?
Correct. I believe it was one move from each of them.
I'm getting an update on this. Magnus Carlsen just resigned, got up, and left. Switched off his camera, and that's all we know right now.
Oh.
So that was what happened, and that was shortly after their game in person where he had lost. And he basically went on social media shortly thereafter and reiterated his concerns and his allegation that this gentleman is cheated. Now, over the course of this whole story unfolding, shortly after the accusations, you know, a couple weeks ago, the internet picked this up and suggested that the way that this gentleman was cheating was that he was using a butt plug that was sending him information via vibrations. So he's got a butt plug that's hooked up to a chess supercomputer that's watching the game and somehow giving him pulses.
The vibrating butt plug,
yes,
apparently sends him AI-inspired information, which he then uses. And by the way, they have taken this so seriously that they now scan his butt before he plays. There's pictures of the chess authorities
wanding.
Scanning.
He's got the big wand. Butt. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're taking it seriously. You know, obviously there are people who think that this warrants it because, to your point, Mark, there has been video that's come out of him attending some in-person chess events since this started. And, you know, they're spending 5-6 times as long on him as they are on any other player. You know, every other player gets the wand up the front, the wand up the back, boom, you're in, you know, just like at a football game. And this guy, they're down there, they're on their knees, they're, you know, doing every angle. And, So Hans Niemann, the younger of the two gentlemen, has now filed a $100 million lawsuit against Magnus, against Play Magnus, and against chess.com.
Yeah, well, Gary will put up the lawsuit, I hope, at some point. We'll be following this because this they filed it, interestingly, in the Eastern District of Missouri. We can talk about this next time. We don't have that much time. But the case itself is, and it's worth quite a read here, because they go into great detail as to what the action is, the nature of the action, obviously, but they go into great detail as to how they think and what they think actually happened here. It's a fascinating read if you're a lawyer and
or just interested in the law, because I found it very interesting as well. I was reading it before we started, and I agree with you. It's a fascinating read.
Yeah, so we'll stay on top of this. I mean, we will leave no butt plug unturned when it comes to following the law wherever it may go.
There's just no proper way to transition when we're talking about this story, is there?
No, none whatsoever. Well, Gary, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a fantastic day. I plan on having the same.
Absolutely, Mark. Thank you for carving out some time for us on a Sunday. We appreciate it, and we'll be back early next week, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.